Okay, and the white paper was actually the work of a whole group, so I want to acknowledge Carrie Souza from NIOSH and Kelly Davis from Pennsylvania State University and Butch DeCastro from University of Washington, who worked on the paper with me. And also the paper was reviewed by David Williams from Harvard School of Public Health and Federico Gutierrez from Alexandria Neighborhood Health Services. So I have nothing to disclose. And our paper focused on workplace injustice, and it's not something that is defined clearly by occupational health or by sociology. So we came up with our own definition, and we defined workplace injustice as discrimination, harassment, bullying based on sociodemographic characteristics, including sexual orientation, gender identity, health condition, and job title position within the workplace. And definition, as you can see, encompasses way more than the EEOC does, but this is what we came up with based on literature. And then we came up with definition for the other workplace injustices, for workplace discrimination, harassment, and then bullying. And so regardless of the definition, what our review showed that this is really about the balance of power. Ultimately, workplace injustice is about the balance of power and how much abuse is allowed to occur. In most cases, the power of the level of power imbalances amongst groups, be it in the society or in a particular workplace, is associated with levels of injustice. So this means that anyone can be a target of workplace injustice. So be you man or woman, you can be sexually harassed. However, study after study keeps showing that minority women report a higher mean level of sexual harassment in the workplace than non-minority women, with Native Americans and African Americans reporting the highest level of sexual harassment. So you see that it's usually the socially disadvantaged and economically disadvantaged who become the main targets of workplace injustice. And to help us understand and put together all the papers that we reviewed, we came up with a conceptual model, which is based on work by Krieger. And I will go through parts of this model as I do the presentation. But we start with structural injustice and then end up with health outcomes, health behaviors and job outcomes, and also we added family well-being. So in creating the conceptual model, we could have made a special model that you need 3D glasses to see the different levels and the different where everything intersects in order to show you that there are actors. The workplace injustice doesn't just happen in a vacuum. But we decided to just go with giving you one slide to show that workplace injustice can be institutional or it could be interpersonal. And that institutional injustice is normative. Sometimes it's actually legalized, and it's part of the culture and often manifests as inherent disadvantage for a particular group. So this means that even when the individual levels of injustice have been lowered or is not as much prevalent, that you can still have institutional injustice. And then interpersonal actors on injustice are usually co-workers, or it could be supervisors, it could sometimes be subordinate, and it can be intentional or unintentional, and it includes acts of omission as well as acts of commission. So things like not being invited to a relevant meeting as a way of bullying is something that is workplace injustice. So in reviewing the literature, we found that actually workplace injustice occurs even before you enter into the labor market. So and then also it could also occur in terms of having disproportionate exposure to occupational hazards, and also having differential enforcement of safety regulations. So is there any evidence to support these three pathways that we saw? Well, there have been several studies, and a lot of them have been very strong experimental studies, asking the question, you know, this is the sexiest title that we found that says, are Emily and Greg more employable than Lakeisha and Jamal? And experiments show that definitely Emily and Greg are more employable, and even when Greg has a record, he's still more employable than Jamal. And several studies have shown this. So before people even enter the workforce, they have this unequal access. And then several studies have shown that black and Hispanic workers, the average black and Hispanic worker is in a more dangerous workplace in terms of occupational fatalities and disease morbidities than other workers. So it's also this disproportionate exposure to occupational hazards. And lastly, this area has received less attention, but there are indications there is lax enforcement of regulations in workplaces where you find mostly socially and economically disadvantaged workers. So that's another way that occupational injustice contributes to health disparities. So in terms of having direct health effects, the broader literature on stress and health show that there is strong evidence for physical, mental, for physical and mental health, and then some for health behavior. And we have less studies focused on occupational health specifically. There have been a lot of cross-sectional studies, but there is strong evidence for a lot of cardiovascular outcomes. There is strong evidence that occupational health, that workplace injustice is associated with cardiovascular health outcomes. And newer studies are using biomarkers and immune response as a way to, even in cross-sectional designs, as a way to strengthen the studies. In terms of mental health, we found evidence for PTSD and psychological distress and depression. Health behaviors have not been studied as much, especially in occupational health. There are some studies showing that there might be an association between racial discrimination and smoking and sexual harassment and alcohol and workplace bullying and alcohol, but most of these studies were cross-sectional, so the evidence is not as strong. And then workplace injustice has indirect effect on health in terms of job outcomes, and then family well-being is something that is new. In terms of job outcomes, studies have shown that there is a wage gap by race, gender, and sexual orientation. Several studies have shown this over throughout the years. And then studies show that workplace injustice is associated with sickness absence from work and also counterproductive work behaviors. So this means that the people who are, you know, as I said, the socially and economically disadvantaged people are more likely to be affected. And then this is an outcome that inhibits their ability to move up in the workplace and also foments early exit from the workplace. And one area that hasn't received as much focus is the family well-being. There have been studies showing that men's report of workplace racism corresponds to depressive symptoms in their partners. And so this is an area that a few studies have delved into, but it looks like workplace injustice is associated with some family well-being outcomes. And then another way that workplace injustice now influences occupational health disparities is that it has a stronger influence on the socially and economically disadvantaged groups. So when even at the same level of workplace injustice, you find that African Americans have significantly higher response to racial ethnic bullying, and that the effect seen in drinking is more for women than for men. And then the effect of seen with depression and exposure to racism happens more for families that are less acculturated than those that have been in the U.S. for a long time and have stronger network. And one area that we were quite disappointed in what we found was in terms of intervention research. We found that a lot of the studies, even though it's shown that the issues are actually structural, a lot of the interventions are focused on training individuals, and that a lot of the structures set up to handle workplace injustice are informal structures, even though studies show that minorities, such as women, are less likely to have access to these kind of structures. So now the interventions actually make things worse in some ways in terms of who can get justice at the end. And when enforced, what we found in terms of the evaluation of the intervention is that it's the local, state, and federal regulations that actually seem to have the most impact. And so lastly, we had two recommendations. One, to improve surveillance, because we couldn't actually get hard numbers that were population representatives. A lot of the studies were sociological studies and were very small studies. And you know, if you look at the studies out there, you think that workplace injustice is a white-collar issue, because that's where most of the studies have taken that have taken place. And lastly, our recommendation is also to really look at intervention development and dissemination. Not many studies have done that. And so we concluded that workplace injustice contributes negatively to the health of all workers, but it particularly contributes to the health of socially and economically disadvantaged workers and their families. Thank you.